Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Diecast Movie Podcast, where we do movie discussions where the genre of the movie is decided by the roll of a die, and we do interviews, too. And today we're doing a movie discussion episode of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. In order to enjoy this episode the most, you probably want to be listening to this around midnight. You want to have some of the props around, and you want to have a little bit of room because there's going to be an intermission. I hope you enjoy this episode. I'm joined with Penny Dreadful, also known as Danielle. She runs the Tara Collinwood, a Dark Shadows podcast on YouTube, which you should all be seeking out and watching. Or you can listen to it because it also has an audio version. But I recommend go to YouTube and watch it there. Jeff Owens and myself, Jeff Owens from the Classic Cars Club podcast, are on one of our episodes, episode 80, where we discuss Monsters of Dark Shadows. And I hope you go there and enjoy that episode where we had a lot of fun. Also, I want to let everybody know that the Classic Cars Club podcast is going to be doing an episode that's going to be coming out not that long after this one, where they're going to be talking about also the Rocky Horror Picture Show and Phantom of the Paradise. So definitely after you listen to this, go listen to theirs or vice versa, whichever way. Have some fun. Enjoy it today. But one thing to remind everybody, if you enjoy this show, send us an email at diecastmoviepodcast@gmail.com or leave us a message on our Facebook page. But I know right now you're all just eager with anticipation for the show to start. So we're going to go right into it. We're going to start with Science Fiction Double Feature, the opening song of the Rocky Horror Picture Show. And right after that, we're going to go straight into discussion with Danielle and myself. We had a lot of fun. I hope you enjoy it too. Hold your seats. Enjoy yourself. Let's have some science fiction double feature fun.
Michael Rennie was ill the day the earth stood still, but he told us where we stand. And Flash Gordon was there in silver underwear. Claude Rains was the invisible man. Then something went wrong for Fay Wray and King Kong. They got caught in a celluloid jam. Then at a deadly pace, it came from outer space. And this is how the message ran.
Science fiction. the late night double feature picture show in the back row. To the late night double feature picture show.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest episode of Diecast Movie Podcast. And we're going to be doing a movie discussion today, which was decided by the roll of a die. And I'm going to be joined by the person who picked the movie, who I rolled the dice for, and that is the one and only, wonderful, lovely, enchanting, and sometimes wicked, Penny Dreadful.
Hello there, Stephen. I'm glad I paid you to give me such a stunning introduction. I sincerely appreciate it.
You're welcome. And of course, you have an alter ego where you can walk around public so people don't realize the evil you're planning to do. And that alter ego is...
Danielle, hi. We've merged into one entity, much to my chagrin. Sadly, Penny Dreadful is part of my psyche now. I can't, the lines are blurred. I sometimes go back and forth. I don't know. Sometimes I wake up in the park and on a bench and I'm wearing a witch hat. I don't know what's going on, Stephen.
So it's a little like Jekyll and Hyde, where now you've merged and you don't know when you're going to change. It could just happen at a whim.
Yes. Yes, indeed. Yes.
But one thing.
When
I'm sorry. You were saying?
Oh, no, nothing. No.
But one thing that you do as Danielle and a little tiny bit as Penny Dreadful is Tarek Collinwood, a Dark Shadows podcast, where you have wonderful episodes where you talk about all these different things with Dark Shadows and you look at it in different aspects. I mean, you also have different people that were starring in Dark Shadows back in the original run. And you get to come back and have them ask them questions and reminisce and all that fun stuff. So if you want to talk a little more about your podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. In addition to the guests you mentioned, you yourself and Jeff Owens from the Classic Horrors Club were on a recent episode when we discussed the monsters of Dark Shadows. So that was really fun. And it was great having you guys on the show. But yeah, it's called Terror at Collinwood. And I've been doing it almost 3 years now. And initially, the podcast started out as focused on all of the Dark Shadows storylines. And I did episodes with fans where we just dove into the storylines and did, you know, really in detailed discussions about the characters and the storylines. And then it also branched into starting to do interviews with cast members and just covering other topics that are Dark Shadows related, like the monsters of Dark Shadows, like we did, and, movies that like Ansel Farage does with the Dark Shadow cast members, and lots of fun topics. We have a lot of fun on the show, and I love hearing different viewpoints from different fans and creators who come onto the show and talk about their passion for Dark Shadows and how it ties into their own experiences and their own interests and things. A lot of them are also classic horror fans in general, which is not surprising given the content of Dark Shadows. So we talk a lot about those kinds of things and the influences on the show. We have a lot of fun, and it's been great having a lot of the actors lately come on to the podcast. Catherine Lee Scott was on recently. I just had Sharon Smith Lentz, who was Sarah Collins on Dark Shadows. And I look forward to continuing into year four coming up. There are going to be discussions about, a lot of people ask about the licensed media for Dark Shadows. I haven't done a whole lot on that, like the Ross novels and the Gold Key comics or newer stuff like the 91 series. So all that stuff I'm going to start diving into in the coming year, in addition to continuing to talk about the original show and the two movies too, The House and Night of Dark Shadows as well.
And that's what I like, is that you're, instead of just staying with the one thing, you're morphing, you're altering the show as you go through, as you hit the different topics. And that way you can also hit other people in different generations. Because I think that's one thing that Dark Shadows has is legs, where it's multi-generational. Because I believe neither you or I were really ever watched the show during its original run. We were way too young to be that, or not even born in some cases, you know. So I think it's one of those great shows that people can watch still today and enjoy the episodes and have fun with, because that's the great thing about a gothic TV show is that it's pretty much bulletproof with being, you know, too passe because of time frames.
Yeah, totally. You nailed it there. It's Dark Shadows almost exists in its own strange world, this gothic world where things like, you know, Vietnam, which was going on at the time, are not even referenced. It's just kind of in its own bubble, right? So it is, it's like, you know, it appeals to anybody who's kind of, I think, wired that way, that loves that gothic, spooky storytelling and that ongoing storyline. And of course, Barnabas Collins, Jonathan Frid, was such an amazing character, an amazing actor who played that role. So to this day, in fact, a couple of years ago, I met a group of Gen Z Dark Shadows fans over at Seaview Terrace. It was like a house that they used for Collinwood. And it was these, like, you know, kids in their 20s. Not, I shouldn't say kids. These people in their 20s. To me, they were kids, but that, you know, they're not. They're adults, you know, but they're in their 20s. They're young, and they're super passionate about Dark Shadows, just like the Run Home From School crowd that watched it originally. I think that's great, you know. For you and I think we're, you know, second generation fans. Like, we had a family member that was a little older than us that watched it when it was on, and then introduced us to it because they were passionate about it, and they passed that love to us too. And I think that's really cool. And I think that's important. That's an important way to keep shows like Dark Shadows around, because now with these streaming channels, there's so many channels and so many options that things like when I was growing up, we had the antenna TV, you had, like, you know, a few channels, like three, it was more than three, I think, at that one. It was a little few, not many more than three, though, maybe five or six, and you could watch, you know, what was on. That was what you watched. So, you know, you'd watch these reruns from the 50s and the 60s, and that was what was on TV when you'd get home from school in the afternoon. It was like Gilligan's Island, The Munsters, F Troop, The Addams Family, all of that. I Dream of Jeannie, Bewitched, all of these shows that were on back then, things like Wild Wild West and cool shows, and then, you know, Leave It to Beaver, just whatever, any of that stuff that was on, you would watch it, you know. And Star Trek, Dark Shadows, all the cool 60s had so many cool, you know, horror, fantasy, sci-fi shows that were fun and colorful and interesting. And you know, Lost in Space, that was another one that I was, you know, remember watching a lot. Now, but it was easy to watch that stuff because it was what was on, right? But now you have to look for it. Like, the younger folks, like, they may have to hear about it somewhere and then they have to seek it out. But it requires them finding out about it first to go find it. It's not like random that usually that it's on a channel while they're surfing channels.
Yeah, because if they start surfing, it could, who knows? Because there's so many options to pick from when they're going to get to it. And that's one thing I like about shows like yours and mine, is that it can help people find the stuff. And of course, one of the things we're going to be talking about is movies. And there's a lot of movies that people sometimes forget about or lose track of. And I always love when we can bring certain movies back to the forefront. This particular movie that we're going to be talking about, and I know everybody is just being shivered with anticipation about what movie we're going to be doing. And that, of course, is the Rocky Horror Picture Show, picked by Danielle, because she rolled foreign and musical, and this is the best she could think of, which I can't argue about.
That's right. I mean, hey, when you said musical and you said foreign, you said, but I think the key was you said foreign could be anything outside the U.S., so it could be English or Canadian, and musical and English. Immediately, Rocky Horror, one of the all-time great cult films. Crispy agrees. My dog Crispy's in the background. Probably can hear her barking, but sorry about that. She'll calm down in a second.
Oh, don't worry. Dog barking is a normal occurrence in our episodes. When I'm at home recording with my dog Milo, will sometimes add his extra critique to the episodes. Yeah. So yes. Let your dog
the children
add,
of the night.
Yes, children of the night. Let the little creature share its faults too. And that helps, because that way people that are listening to podcasts with their dogs, they'll get, the dog will know what's going on.
That's right. That's right. She's playing the part of the dogs that chase Rocky in the film, you know, and the dogs are chasing Rocky when he's running around. So she's cheering for them.
Which is good.
they deserve recognition too.
But I love that you picked it. And the Rocky Horror Picture Show is one of these things that is interesting. It's a cult movie that everybody knows, but not everybody knows. Because by being a cult movie, I think that's its definition. There's a group that are always going to know, but I think a lot of people in the United States, if you were to say Rocky Horror Picture Show, it's a 50-50, I think, if people have actually seen it or not. I think there's a good portion of the population that have seen it or at least know exactly what you're talking about. And then I think there's half the people that are still going to look at you like, what?
Yeah. I think some people are afraid to see it. Like, oh yeah, I know about that movie. They kind of avoid it. There are some people I know that I'm surprised have not seen it. In fact, I'm like, really? You haven't seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show? I think it's important to see it in its proper place, which is at midnight with a bunch of crazy screaming fans who are wearing costumes, Rocky Horror themed costumes, and screaming the most vulgar things at the screen that you could imagine. If you have not experienced that, and if that intrigues you, then I highly encourage you to give that a try, because it's a good time. If you go with some friends to the Rocky Horror Picture Show, you'll have fun, or you'll be scandalized for the rest of the evening. Either way, it works.
Well, one way or the other, you're going to have an experience. I saw it for the first time in the theater. My brother took me to it when I was in middle school, and I got to see it that way with a crowd that was throwing popcorn and all that, whatever other stuff. I mean, it's kind of, you know, it's dark. It's always hard to know exactly what's being thrown. Sometimes you really don't want to know what's being thrown at the screen.
Yep.
or near you. You're just glad it didn't land on you. This is one of those movies that you definitely don't want to sit too close to the screen.
Yes. Yeah. There was one time, because we used to do it in college, where my friend Mark, who has since passed away. And one year they did it, and my friend Rebecca, who is the director of Shilling Shockers, of my horror host show, and plays Luna in the show, she was Frankenfurter. The year I did it, she was Magenta. She was Frankenfurter. And somebody in the audience, I mean, these people were nuts in the audience. I mean, they were throwing rice, I mean, bags of rice during the wedding scene, and super soaker squirt guns. It was nuts. But one person, this is because there are props that you are certified Rocky Horror things that you throw, but somebody decided when Frankenfurter goes, "Don't get hot and flustered, use a bit of mustard." And the person had French's mustard, a plastic container, and just squirted tons of mustard on directly at Rebecca at Frankenfurter on the stage, and then threw the bottle of mustard at her, which is awful. Like, that's way crossing the line. He got thrown out by security. They dragged him out, and she was obviously quite upset about that. That's not cool. I think they were using the actors as target practice, because under the screen, you know, they're performing, imitating the movie, and that wasn't cool at all. But there are certain things, you know, that are kind of expected, like the toast. You know, that doesn't hurt anybody. Throw a few toasts, and when they say a toast, you know, and you throw the toast, or the toilet paper. That's another big one. The toilet paper, and the rice is. Some people allow the rice. Some theaters don't, though, because it makes a huge mess. And I remember we would have to stay so late, like just after, because it started at midnight. You know, you have pre-show, then it'd start at midnight, Rockywood, and then it'd be over, and you're there in the middle of the night. You know, 3 a.m, vacuuming rice and toast and picking up tons of toilet paper all over the theater. But we had a good time. It was fun.
And one of the things when I was typed in Rocky Horror Picture Show, just to look at some stuff earlier today. I saw when it first typed it in, there's a showing coming up in my area at midnight week. I was just like, wait a minute. Here it is. Because one thing that people don't realize, Rocky Horror Picture Show holds the record for the longest still being out from its initial release. So this movie is still on its initial run. And it's going to be, 50 years next year?
Yeah, yes. Yeah, 75 was when the film came out. Yeah, so it's going to be 50 years. That's nuts. And you told me, I remember you told me, I didn't even think about this, but Disney bought Fox, so that means Disney owns Rocky Horror, which is really mind-blowing. So Disney made some kind of deal to still keep Rocky out, right?
Yeah, it was something where Fox, when they had all their stuff, they had this thing where it was, from what I read, where movie theaters could reach out to them and get certain films. They were always ready to go. And so because of the constant use of these midnight shows and its cult status, it's always been in its initial release. And when Disney took it over, a lot of Fox movies, they vaulted them and put them in it, because Disney's notoriously known for the vault. Like, they'll have things out for a while, then they'll disappear for a while. So you keep that anticipation of when movies will come out. I mean, after you see this movie, you can't say anticipation any other way, Danielle.
It's true. You're right. Correct.
And so they decided, though, with this particular movie, and I think there's a couple others, they said they were going to leave it in that system. They did not want to be known as Dwayne. And obviously, because it's at one of the theaters that's in my area, in a little more than a week. By the time this episode comes out, it would have played. And no, it's the theater is a little too far away for me to drive down to it. And I'm getting to that age where a midnight show, it's not all it's cracked up to be.
Yeah.
The next day.
Yes, I can relate to that. Yeah. Yep. I used to be able to do it, but now the thought of doing it is a really daunting thing. There's a great group here called the RKO Players, and they do Rocky. They do it at conventions and stuff and theaters, and they still do it, and they do other things too, like the lesser known sequel to Rocky, Shock Treatment, which had Brad and Janet in it, but two different actors playing Brad and Janet. Richard O'Brien was in it, and I think Patricia Quinn, Little Mel were in it, but they've totally different characters. It involves like a crazy game show, and it had songs in it too. There was one of the songs, Little Black Dress, was popular, but it was Richard O'Brien trying to create a cult film on purpose versus Rocky, which became a cult film by accident, which is how it's supposed to happen. I don't think you can go in intentionally and you're like, I'm going to create a cult film. It just happens organically, like it did with Rocky. It did not happen with Shock Treatment, but it has its fans. RKO does Shock Treatment sometimes too, and other things they do.
I'm going to paraphrase a song title right here. Damn it, Danielle. We haven't talked really about the movie at all yet. We've been talking about the theater experience. We've been talking about how it's going to release, but we haven't even described the Rocky Horror Picture Show and the music that we love. So, yeah. Danielle, can you, in a brief synopsis, if this is even possible, if you think you can phantom it, if you can, warp your mind and do this, can you describe the movie in a Reader's Digest version, which ages both of us, so that people will know what the Rocky Horror Picture Show is about? Or is that just too mind-boggling of a thing to do?
Frankenfurter says, a mental mind. Well, I'm going to say that's a naughty word. A mental mind can be nice. So Rocky Horror was written by Richard O'Brien. It started as a stage play in 1973, and it opened in London, and it was a huge hit. It became a huge sensation, and then it went to Los Angeles at the Roxy. It went to New York, and then they made a movie out of it, and a lot of the cast members from the stage version did the movie, including the amazing Tim Curry, who is such an iconic character, performance, and actor. I mean, what an amazing, just Tim Curry alone in anything. I said this last time I talked to you. Even if it's a bad movie, if you got Tim Curry there, he elevates the movie because, you know, at least you have something to look forward to if Tim Curry is in there. And with this movie, you have Tim Curry, but you also have Richard O'Brien, who plays Riff Raff. You have Patricia Quinn as Magenta. You have Little Nell playing Columbia. You got Meatloaf as Eddie. So many great characters. Charles Gray is the narrator. You got Peter Hinwood as Rocky. Susan Sarandon and Barry Boswick as Janet and Brad. And then you got Jonathan Adams as Dr. Scott. So you've got a great cast here, and some of them carried over from the stage version. Tim Curry, Richard O'Brien, Patricia Quinn, Little Nell, several of them did. And this movie, so Richard O'Brien was an unemployed actor at the time, and to pass the time, he started writing this stage show based on his own passion and love for classic horror and science fiction that he grew up loving, and he worked all of that kind of interest into it. But it's also, so you got this horror sci-fi stuff going on. It's also a musical, a rock and roll musical, so you got these really cool rock songs in there. And it's also written during the height of glam rock. You know, glam rock was going on, so you have a lot of this gender and sexual fluidity in the film, and really colorful and subversive, all of these things combined together. So you get this couple that's, Brad and Janet, they're this innocent, sweet, wholesome couple that you'd see in one of those classic films, and their car breaks down outside a big castle. And of course, this is, kind of the old dark house scenario, of course. And so, it's a big thunderstorm and everything, and they go to this castle, which is Oakley Court, that we've seen in many Hammer films over the years. The Reptile is one that comes to mind, but there wasn't a bunch of Hammer films. And they go to this house, and they meet these weird, very weird people, weird servants. They do a dance number, which we can talk about the music and note in just a little bit. And then they meet Dr. Frankenfurter, Tim Curry, the sweet transvestite from Transsexual Transylvania, who is bananas. Just a mad scientist, cross-dressed mad scientist, who is great attitude and super arrogant and is building a monster, or a lover or whatever. he's building this creature, and it's Rocky, and the Rocky tank. So he brings Rocky to life. Things do not go as planned. Everything goes awry. Rocky and Janet kind of thing develops with them, and Frank is not happy about this. Eddie, the greaser from the freezer, like a bat out of hell, comes out, and things just kind of go berserk. And then Dr. Scott shows up, Eddie's his uncle shows up to investigate what's going on, what happened to his nephew. And turns out, Frankenfurter is an alien. All of these characters are, Riff Raff and Magenta and stuff, they're from outer space. They have to be stopped. And Frankenfurter then makes them all do this big dance number. It's difficult to describe. You have to see it for yourself. And it's a sad ending. I will say that. It's kind of a sad ending for the Rocky Horror Picture Show, but a really cool film. The very definition of a cult movie, for sure.
Thank you for such a brief synopsis.
Hey, you know what you were getting into when you invited me on here. You can't, once you get me talking, you can't shut me up.
yes, I know. It's just the way we always are. We're podcasters, and we love certain movies, and once we start talking about them, we just can't stop. Now, this movie, I love it because it uses the gender-bending theme all the way through the movie. I mean, that is the ongoing theme, and the way the movie opens with Patricia Quinn's lips, but Richard O'Brien's voice sets the tone right for the beginning. Because when you're watching it for the first time, you're starting to think, oh, it looks like a female's lips, but it's a male voice. Well, yeah. So maybe it's a guy's lips. But and so the whole time your mind is thinking, because remember, this came out in 1975. So things were a lot different in 1975 than they are today. We're talking just about 50 years ago. You know, depending on when you listen to this podcast, it could be over 50 years ago. But right now it's 49 years ago. So times were very, very different in that period. And this movie embraces that and then just says, okay, this is what we're doing and we're going to be in your face, which is why, it's still in its initial run, but when it had its opening in all the theater houses, it tanked because I don't think people really knew what to make of it and how to sell it.
Yeah.
But then that one of the executives at Fox decided that there was success with these things at midnight and started putting it out there. And then suddenly it developed into what we talked about earlier. And it had the legs, but the opening, I think, really sets the tone for the whole movie. What do you think?
Oh, absolutely. You hit the nail on the head with that. Yeah. With the lips, Patricia Quinn's lips and Richard O'Brien's voice coming out of the mouth, it just immediately sets the tone with the gender bending. But also with the horror element, horror and sci-fi elements, because everything that's being sung about is like, you know, the Invisible Man and King Kong and Fay Wray and, you know, Dana Andrews and, you know, Curse of the Demon, all of these really cool references throughout that opening song, all these classic films that are being mentioned, mixed with this kind of gender bending theme. In a rock song, a beautiful song. I love that. Science Fiction Double Feature is the name of the song. I love that song. But yeah, totally, you nailed it. It definitely sets the mood for the whole thing. I think it was kind of ahead of its time, because when it came out during that time, I can absolutely see audiences, like I can see it being like popular in these like underground theater spaces and, you know, it's the hip thing, but in a wide release movie, I could see people being like, completely, what is this? Like, you know, is this a horror movie? Is it a comedy? Is it a musical? It's all of those things combined together, and it's so much fun. And then it kind of got a second life. Much like Rocky being brought to life, it kind of became its own crazy thing with the cult following and midnight showings and all of that.
And for listeners wondering, before we started this episode, you would have heard me do the introduction, and of course, the song that would precede us talking about this discussion is Science Fiction Double Feature. So you would have heard exactly what we're talking about right now. The only thing you're missing is the red lips, because it's an audio podcast. You know, so but you know, to watch the movie, it's readily available, so you can see it. And if you just want to see the red lips, just any poster, pretty much a Rocky Horror Picture Show, the red lips are prevalent.
And I can see Steven, and even though you can't, and he is sitting right in front of the red lips. He has that as his background on the screen to set the mood for this discussion, which I was thrilled to see.
Everything is, you have to, image is everything. You got to have certain images there. And if I ever decided to do a video podcast like on YouTube, one, people would not want to see my face. I would have to have some kind of props around me to keep it interesting.
That's not true.
I have two older brothers that would disagree with you.
You should definitely do consider special episode, video episodes. I love that you have the lips back there. And that became like the symbol for Rocky Horror, the lips. It's just such a crazy thing. And really subversive. Like, I can also imagine, like, you know, for Frank creating this monster lover who got carried to get married, like he carries him off can you imagine, like, well, 50 years ago, that's kind of something that audiences would never expect to see. But I think just in general, the Rocky Horror experience spoke to a lot of kind of outsiders. And I talk about this kind of thing in the Dark Shadows podcast too. I think just in general, like that horror in general does kind of, and sci-fi and fantasy does kind of speak to people who are you feel a little different or whatever. But Rocky especially, I think, definitely connects a lot with kids. I remember in college, it was like all kind of the weird kids were all the kind of the ones cool. They were cool, but it was like all kind of the kids on the fringes were the ones who were super into Rocky Horror, myself included at that time.
And I agree with you. And continuing the gender bender theming of the whole movie, the movie then goes into a traditional, the end of a traditional wedding, as you said, where the rice is thrown, and we see we see the friends of Janet and Brad, you know, going off. They're going to go away, and they're going to get married. And we see that Janet catches the bouquet, so she's going to be the next one married, and she's all excited about it. But one of the things I noticed in this viewing, and maybe it's because this is the first time I ever watched a movie by myself, so I'm actually focused on the movie, unlike the crowd and everything else going around. Brad, when he starts to sing the song, before he starts to sing the song, "Damn It, Janet," which basically he ends up proposing to another stuff, he seems ambivalent. It's almost like he doesn't want to get married, but he's supposed to get married because it's the traditional thing to do. And what I like about this tradition, which is then they're thrown through this meat grinder the rest of the movie, which takes away those traditions. It's almost like like Frankenfurter is using them as clay, and he's sculpting new people out of them through what he does to them or around them and with them through the movie. And I think they're totally transformed by the end. They are the characters that have the things that are going to happen to them. They're the ones that are transformed in the movie. It's their story, in a sense. They're background characters. They really don't do much, like, as protagonists. Everything's happening pretty much to them. But they do, if you focus on them, that is 1975, the world. And what you see now is what's the end of the movie. It's kind of like, it's like this is what, when you're through that experience, your mind is changed and altered about different perceptions. Yeah. And I think we, as the audience in 1975, were Brad and Janet. And now, at the end of the movie, you are no longer that same Brad and Janet. What do you think? Or am I overthinking this?
No, I think that's an excellent way of describing those characters and the trajectory that they go through in the film. And because of Frankenfurter, I love how you describe them being put through the meat grinder and re-sculpted by Frank. That's exactly what happened. It just kind of, he takes these traditions that they were kind of following early in the film and dismantles them and then puts them back together. And we see the aftermath of that, obviously. I think, if the film had continued on, they probably would have joined, with Magenta and Columbia and all of these characters hanging out at the castle with Frank, because they've been altered now. But we see them crawling through, and when the superhero song is playing at the end, and they're crawling through kind of the rubble of after the castle takes off. It's like, what happens to Brad and Janet after this? Like, how when they go through life now, what is life going to be like for them now, for sure.
And you can almost look at it, because a lot of college students and high school students love this movie, as we said, that age group, the 16, the 24-year-old group, the ones that are the appropriate, I think, perfect for this movie to see it the first time. But if you look at high school and college years, you are going through adolescent into young adulthood. You are going through that same transformation. Now, everything that you experience is going to be different. Everybody has a different Rocky Horror Picture Show. That's their real life. But I think it also, you can say it's the same changes that we go through. And how do we end up afterwards? Could it be that trains be better for us or worse for us? And everybody's going to go through that differently, and how they're going to come out in the end. And I think that's what they're showing at the end of the movie is this is them now alone. The parental figures or whatever, the figures, the teachers, the mentors are now gone. And you are now left alone to now go through the world. And I think if it would have ended a little, like you said, what they would have done, I think it would have been more of a perfect ending to see what lessons did they take to heart, or which ones are you going to ignore. That would have been interesting to see if there would have been an additional scene. I think what you brought up would be very, I'd be very curious.
Yeah, their eyes have been opened to things they never would have conceived of before. And in fact, even before they get to the castle, Brad is so dismissive of the motorcycle. People like, life's pretty cheap for that sort. Just when the Transylvanians are heading to Frankenfurter's place. And by the end, you know, they've all both seen and done these things that have completely altered them. It's funny when you mentioned, you know, adolescence, watching my late husband, Magoo, who was guru and Chilling Shockers, he used to say, when I was in high school, I majored in Rocky Horror. That was, he loved Rocky too. He had a big Rocky Horror banner of the lips from that era. It was like from the 70s, and he still had it hanging up. It definitely speaks to people. And I love that you mentioned that Damn It Janet song too, because you see like Tim Curry and Patricia Quinn, Little Nell, Richard O'Brien, you see them all kind of in the mix in there during that wedding scene without makeup and just playing these kind of dull townspeople in the background. But it's fun that they're in there. And that song is great too, Damn It Janet. All the songs are so memorable. They're so, so good. And Richard O'Brien wrote all of those songs. He's multi-talented. He was an actor, but also a writer and a musician. And he wrote the book and the music for the play version. They used those songs. Jim Sharman?
Yeah, Jim Sharman directed it. And helped write a little bit of it. I think he helped tweak it for the screenplay.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. The music, all of those songs, you know, and then when they get to the car breaks down and they get to the castle, and they go in and it's, they meet Riff Raff, who's so like weird classic horror servant kind of character, you've arrived on a rather special night, you know, with that voice. And, he's so creepy and great. And Magenta, who's insane, his sister, and there's a weird incestuous kind of thing going on with Riff Raff and Magenta too, which is, that's implied too. And that's pretty skeevy, but again, really weird, subversive stuff. And then the time warp happens, which of course is the...
You said the magic word. Listeners, we're doing something new this episode, something we've never done before, probably will never do again. We're doing an intermission because it's time for everybody to do the time warp. So you're going to hear the song. We need you to get up, dance to the music, and have some
all
fun.
All right.
So listeners...
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
Just a jump to the left.
And then a stretch to the right.
With your hands on your hips.
You can't see me. No, not at all. In another dimension, with voyeuristic intention. Well secluded, I see all.
With a bit of a mind flip,
you're into the time slip.
And nothing can ever be the same.
You're spaced out on sensation,
like you're under.
Me.
jump to the left.
We're expecting the ride.
Put your hands on your hips.
I'm a little out of breath. You know, I'm getting a little old for this, Danielle.
I think I threw out my hip.
I guess you need a medic. I need oxygen. but hopefully everybody got that. You always need to get some cardio in. You know, if you want to live a long life, cardio is good and the time warp is good for you.
That's right.
But you said the magic word. I was waiting for you to say time warp because that kicked off the time warp intermission, because I know people were listening with anticipation for that time warp song.
You should drink every time Stephen says anticipation.
That's how you do it, Danielle. That's how you do it. All right.
So yeah, the time warp, that's the one. Every Halloween you'll hear that in mixes, people's mixes or on the radio or wherever. When I used to do a radio show at the local university, my Halloween show, I had to play the time warp. And one year I did a whole Rocky Horror theme. I played like the whole album of different versions, because there've been so many releases of different versions of Rocky. So that was fun playing all of those.
And how often do you have a song where one of your dance instructors is Charles Gray?
Exactly. Yes. Dancing on the desk and great callbacks too during these songs, these bits, for those who haven't been to the Rocky Horror, when people are yelling callbacks at the screen, they're just, some of them are so funny, and they add new ones all the time and cycle them out, and they come up with all kinds of hilarious, just stupid. I mean, some of them are just stupid, but they're funny. Like, I remember the first time I heard when Frankenfurter says, "I remove the cause, but not the symptoms," and everybody yells, "The Simpsons." And then other people go, "No," in the background. It's just ridiculous. Time warp, that's a classic one. And then that leads into the introduction of the amazing Tim Curry as Dr. Frankenfurter. He sings "Sweet Transvestite," which is another great song, such a rocking song. And he has such attitude when he sings that. Frank's all about attitude when he comes in and with that cape with the big collar, and then he throws the cape off, and, he's wearing fishnets and a corset, and he's just going to town. I mean, he's just electrifying. And I heard an interview with Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, and the voice of the Joker, and Mark, the amazing Mark Hamill, too. And Mark Hamill saw, I think it was the LA one, he saw Tim Curry on stage playing Frankenfurter before the movie. He said, if you thought he was amazing in the film, you should have seen him on the stage version. He said he was absolutely electric on stage. Like, he was just energy and presence off the charts. And he said he was amazing in the movie, but he said even more on stage. So I would have loved to have seen him live as Frankenfurter. That must have been incredible to see that.
I look at his performance as Frankenfurter, as an actor who's knows the role, because he did it for, he said, a couple years on stage. So he knew the role inside and out. And I can imagine him doing the same performance in the theater as he's doing in the movie. But it's always better when it's live in theater, because we all love theater, because it's something you have to enjoy and cherish. But one of the things he does is he has no F's to give. He's just going out there. And he's just, this is the truth of the character. And he is just going to own it and let it run. Because some actors I can see have, they might not do it with, such an abandonment. They might be a little restrained, because You really have to just own it. You have to be it. And there's not there's not many performers, I think, that could come close to doing it. Other people have done it, you know, and I think they've done great jobs. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Tim Curry is the original and, to me, the only Dr. Frankenstein that there could ever be. And to come out, what is this, his movie debut and everything, it's for film. This is your entrance, and you're just literally drawn to him. And I love how they have Brad and Janet drawn back into the main area where everybody was dancing, when they just basically worked their way out of that area and they encountered Frankenstein. And just a few lines of dialogue and just the way he or she, they carry themselves into the film. Well, I mean, it's
they call him he in the movie, but I guess if they did it now, they might say they. I wonder,
I don't know anymore. Maybe I'll just call him Doctor. Doctor.
Dr. Frankenstein.
Doctor, what do you do? I got a mad. I could just imagine him singing that song and changing some of the lyrics around with Richard Brenda. That would be Dr. Frankenfurter could do with that song.
But in the new one with Laverne Cox, it was the she. But they went with he in the film version on the original film. But he was, Tim Curry just owned that scene. And it was like, it's like if you take Dracula and combine Dracula with a dominatrix. I mean, it's kind of what it is. It's like, it has that whole vibe to what's going on here. But just charismatic and compelling. And then after the song's over and then talking to Brad and Janet, with that lab coat on and just how he kind of has the drink and says, do you have any tattoos, Brad? Oh, no. How about you? And he turns it to Janet and asks, there's a very charismatic and charming quality to Frankenfurter, and also totally insane too. Frankenfurter is nuts, when he brings Rocky to life and twisting all the dials and, goes full mad scientist, bringing Rocky to life. It's just really, and bringing all those tropes in too from, we see like Hammer, I mentioned Hammer, Oakley Court, but also just things from like the tank, the Rocky tank, that's from Revenge of Frankenstein, the tank that they used to bring Rocky to life. So there's Frankenstein imagery. There's later on in the film, there's King Kong imagery. There's like all kinds of nods to all of these classic horror and sci-fi things in the film, which I thought was super cool and kind of an unexpected thing to see combined with the rock and roll gender bending stuff, but with classic horror and sci-fi elements mixed into it. It's made for like you said, the kind of adolescents who are kind of finding themselves or outsiders and things like that, for sure.
What I also find interesting, and I want to talk about next, we're talking about the lab. It's a set they're dressing for the various rooms that we've experienced in the movie is great because each one is totally different and unique. And of course, the lab is more Spartan. You can see everything. There's not much there. Like the lab, some labs are like tons and tons of stuff, but this one is a very sparse lab, which is necessary for a lot of the things they're going to be doing with the numbers. The room with the elevator, also the room where Brad and Janet first come in with Riff Raff and Magenta, has so much different things around it. Like a cougar with a snake or some kind of wildcat with a snake going around it, like taxidermy was set in there. You have all these different things to look at going around in that room. It's like, it's almost like a cabinet of curiosities in a room. So you have all these different things that can draw. So the set design there was great. And then of course the hall where they're all doing a number for time warp and things like that, where it's like the old fashioned dancing area where you have your banquet. And it's like, oh, now we're going to be tied to the dance and have our waltz type thing in the castle. And I like how they designed the sets with it. And I think each room serves a purpose. As you said, showing nods back to those old 30s, 40s, 50s science fiction horror classics. Each room is like a little homage to those different rooms. And I think that is just wonderful. And we'll eventually get to, it's like the theater type room where King Kong is definitely showing homage. And also the old movies where they used to have the musical numbers with the swimmers, you know,
yes,
and that kind of
thing. Yeah, yes. Busby Berkeley's films. Yeah, for sure. Yep.
So many callbacks, as you said, callbacks, you know, it's just to different films. Richard O'Brien was a genius. I mean, really, yeah. As Wadi Coyote, genius. Genius.
Absolutely. And still is, too. He's still acting, as far as I know. I think he's still doing his thing. But yeah, just to come up with that, just to concoct and something like that, it's incredible. Like, that even came into existence. And, you know, then when Rocky comes to life, played by Peter Hinwood. And we didn't mention much about Susan Sarandon and Barry Bostwick, but that was a very early role for Susan Sarandon, who then became a movie star later on. She's as far as I know, she's pretty good natured about her whole Rocky experience. She's kind of embraced that over the years. I think there was a period probably where she was kept away from that, but she's kind of embraced that whole thing.
Yeah, from what I read, she got, as most people know Rocky, her picture, she was very ill. She had like pneumonia because of the being wet and the castle being drafty. And so I can imagine people always look at, this must have been so much fun. But if you know behind the scenes, like somebody was ill during the production, and yet you got to give her credit. Here she is, very sick, and still doing all these different things that you had to do for the performance. So you have to give them credit, because some people would have been like, I just can't go on. And I think it adds to the character in some ways, because you hate to say this, but her illness probably added to some of that, like, she's being overcome by all this stuff being thrown at her. Well, literally, she's being overcome by illness. So, you know, the makeup might, you know, have been accentuated by the illness that she was going through.
Yeah, maybe it fueled her performance in some way as she's going through that. But that's remarkable that she got through that, because so there's a lot of, especially with Janet, there's a lot of activity going on with Rocky and everything, and all of that stuff going. Then Frankenfurter's chasing her, jealous Frankenfurter is chasing Janet around the castle. You have to, after Rock comes to life, you have some music there, the Sword of Damocles and all this kind of stuff. And then the Eddie thing happens too, out of nowhere. You have Meatloaf show up in the film. He's been in the freezer this whole time. He was the previous fling of Frankenfurter, who was the pizza boy, I guess, for Dr. Scott's nephew that came to the house and was also probably altered, I think, by Frankenfurter. In some way, but before him, I think it was Columbia. Frank just had this string of you chew people up and then you spit them out again. That's what Frank does. You have the whole, after Rocky comes to life, Eddie comes out of the freezer and does that great rock and roll, 50s style rock and roll number, Whatever Happened to Saturday Night. Very memorable song, kind of fun to see Meatloaf in there. And then Frank kills him. You see Frank commit murder. So kind of takes a darker turn there. And then after that, that's when things start to really unravel, because Frank's plan just quickly starts to fall apart here shortly thereafter. Because Rocky and Janet are attracted to each other. So she and Rocky connect, I guess, so that then they have something happen, and Brad is off alone. And Frankenfurter molests both of them too. I forgot to mention, Janet and Brad get molested by Frankenfurter, which is problematic. I don't think you'd see that in a movie today. I don't know if they would. I don't know. I guess they would.
I don't see why,
he kind of sexually assaults both of them, but then let him do it.
he overcomes both. And I think Frankenfurter obviously had Rocky made to be his companion. And if he would have stayed with Rocky, if he wouldn't have let his drives the doctor wouldn't have had to drive to continue. It's like, oh, let me pursue Janet. Let me pursue Brad. Stay with Rocky. Then nothing bad would have happened in that end with, like, losing that connection. Rocky never would have had a chance to be with Janet and so on. But it wouldn't have been as but then the stuff that Frankenfurter needed to do in order for the journey of Brad and Janet to be transformed wouldn't have happened. So mm-hmm. by going into continuing the journey of, I like to experiment on them too. It's like I have too many subjects. I don't want to lose my subjects. I need right. my subjects, you know, and to continue. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it's the ego, you know, led to the downfall of Frankenfurter. Yeah. And I don't think Frankenfurter, I don't know if we can classify him as crazy in normal terms, because as we find out, as you already alluded to, he, Riff Raff, and Magenta are all aliens. And all right, so yeah. who's to say what is normal and not normal for them? You know, because all three of them, to our way of looking at it as Homo sapiens, they would be unhinged.
Right. yes. And of course, Dr. Scott shows up to, you know, investigate what happened to Eddie. And he's, has thick this German accent. He's in a wheelchair. And he knows the score when it comes to them. You know, he knows that they're aliens and they must be stopped and all of this, and just great dinner scene with them. So then you bring in this almost kind of Van Helsing-esque kind of character, but he too falls under the sway of Frankenfurter. Nobody can escape the gravitational pull of Dr. Frankenfurter is what it is. Everybody kind of ends up getting, you know, he has the, what is that machine? Oh, gosh. The machine that he has, the transducer, the transducer will seduce you. And then he freezes them all with the transducer. Yeah. Sonic transducer. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting because they all got changed into statues and all the statues are pretty much naked. That kind of thing. It's like, oh, okay. Boom, boom. And of course they had the Roman Greco, Greek, period, you know, of style. And it was interesting because then I was like, oh, I wonder what's going to happen here. But they get reanimated again, and then they have mind paint on or like clown paint on. It was just, like you can tell they've been totally altered, and at that point they've been transformed.
Yeah, they're all dressed like a kind of like showgirls, but with clownish kind of makeup on too. And they do, it's the floor show. They have this big musical number. It was great when it all began. And they do this whole, and they're under Frankenfurter's control. Like there's, you know, the machine, it's like Magenta pulling the switches and they're all kind of dancing there. But they're doing this so they can't stop themselves from doing this number. And then it culminates in Frankenfurter coming out, and this, you know, with a feather in his hair and a boa, and it's great. And you have to see the RKO, ding, 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 the RKO symbol. And Frankenfurter does this soulful song, you know, whatever happened to Fay Wray, that delicate satin drapery, we clung to her thigh, how I wanted to cry, because I wanted to be dressed just the same. And then he does this whole give yourself over to absolute pleasure. And then there's the whole theme of don't dream it, be it. That's like, which I think also speaks to a lot of people, a lot of young people, especially like, you know, embrace who you be, who you are, be true to yourself and don't be, let your freak flag fly or, you know, whatever it is, you know, do you kind of thing. Don't dream it, be it. And also kind of the following your dreams, kind of whatever you want to pursue. And I don't know, there's a lot you can read into that whole don't dream it, be it. But I think that being true to yourself and being being open about yourself and whatever you and whoever you are, I think that theme spoke to a lot of people. And I think that song is a cool song. But then they all kind of have this orgy in the pool, this Busby Berkeley type scene. Basically, about like a pool orgy kind of a thing. Well, that's what's the implication there, I think. And then, but of course, it has to end. It has to come all crashing down with a very sad kind of or harsh kind of ending, I think, with Riff Raff and Magenta coming in their outfits from their home planet, their kind of space outfits, and they have ray guns, and Frankenfurter must be stopped. He's out of control. So they confront Frankenfurter, and then they wrote another song, another very soulful song, "I'm Going Home," you know, that whole bit. So, and Riff Raff is he didn't like me, he like kind of has a little meltdown there, like he wanted Frankenfurter's affection, and Frankenfurter, he felt kind of spurned, I guess, by Frankenfurter. No, never treated him very well. So there's that kind of comes out of nowhere too.
Well, it fits, it goes back to the how the mad scientist always treats the lab assistant, you know, how it's like, it's almost like Rodney Dangerfield. I never got any respect, no respect. Mm-hmm. And how he's going through that. And of course, Rocky's in the picture now, the Adonis of the body, which Frankenfurter swoons at, Janet swoons at, women that watch this movie and some men will swoon at, you know, it's just the way it goes. Cause it's just this body, you know, it's like some, study that just took off Muscle Beach at 1975 and put on the screen. He's got the oil and everything on pretty much in every shot. So it's interesting to see with Rocky, you know, going through it. It's like, no wonder Janet was like, oh yeah, Rocky. Oh
yeah. And now Peter Hinwood kind of avoids the whole Rocky thing. He's an antiques dealer in England, I believe. And he doesn't really want to be involved in the Rocky Horror stuff. Maybe he's a little embarrassed of running around in the, actually that gold underwear, he sold the gold underwear. And I think it's at a Hard Rock cafe somewhere in the US now, one of the Hard Rock cafes, you can see Rocky's gold underwear. But Frank gets shot with the ray gun, he gets shot by Riff Raff and dies, which is super sad. And then Rocky gets upset and throws Frankenfurter over his shoulder and does the whole King Kong bit where he's climbing up the RKO tower and waving his fist and all of this. And then Rocky gets shot several times by the ray gun by Riff Raff, and finally falls down too. And he Rocky dies too. And then Riff Raff tells Brad and Janet and Dr. Scott, you know, that it was necessary that it had to be done. Of course, Dr. Scott's like, you're okay by me. Like, total chicken there, kind of a move by Dr. Scott. And so they have to evacuate the premises, and the castle turns out it's a spaceship that the castle itself lifts off into space. As Brad and Janet and Dr. Scott are all left in the rubble singing superheroes, Dr. Scott in his wheelchair kind of flipped backwards there, and kind of a weird ending, to the film. But how are you going to end that? How can you really end such a film, you know, honestly?
Well, I think they could have ended it in this way, because the criminologist, Charles Gray, is narrating various parts, and he's not with the main people. And early in the movie, when it was at the first wedding scene, you see these two guys taking pictures of various people there. And then you see Charles Gray having a dossier of each one with the pictures and the background stuff. And he's referring to stuff that happened in the past. So like he's recounting the events, like he's interviewed Brad and Janet and possibly Dr. Scott. Like we never see it, but I'm just presupposing this because he's like some kind of criminologist, some kind of investigator for the police. What happened that night at Denton, which was one of the titles that it could have been, was like the, what had like something at Denton. It was like Night at Denton or What Happened One Night or whatever. Mm-hmm. I think the Rocky Horror Picture Show is a way better title. And I think they could have ended it with the criminologist, and you could have had a summary of what happened with them afterwards, or you could have seen him with them, you know, like they came back where there's a little time lapse. That's why I'm saying we could have had that thing where we could have seen what the what became of the three of them after going through that night.
Right.
The criminologist would have been the key. You established him after shortly in the beginning, and he's referring back to things that have already happened.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you could have utilized him at the end and had that there. So that would have been your bookend. It was like
him. That would have been a bookend. Yeah, that would have been a good idea to have kind of a bookend thing going on there. I think that would have been interesting because when they did Shock Treatment, Brad and Janet are in it, but they don't reference the events of Rocky Horror. It's almost like a whole new adventure for Brad and Janet, but without any reference to what took place in that story. So that it was almost like an anthology thing. Like, it's just, here's a whole new story with Brad and Janet. But they did talk about doing a sequel at one point. I know there was a talk of, the whole idea was there was going to be Tim Curry was going to play Frankenfurter's mother, who was going to come to Earth to avenge her son's death, is what it was, which I thought was fun. That would have been fun to see Tim Curry and play Frankenfurter's mother. I was like, whatever you have Frank, they never did it, obviously, but if they had done it, that would have been kind of fun. But yeah, I think that would have been an interesting bookend. The superhero song is kind of incredible. It sounds like the Incredible Hulk theme from the 70s show with Lou Ferrigno and Bill Bixby. People yell that out as one of the callbacks, too. It's the theme from the Incredible Hulk.
The Lonely Man theme. I love that scene.
Yeah, yes. I love that theme, too. That's a wonderful, great theme. I used to love that show, too. But, the Rocky Horror Picture Show, I think if you watch it on its own, the first time I ever watched Rocky, this is kind of sad, I was in high school with my friends Ivan and Mike, and I had heard of Rocky, but I had not seen it, and Mike somehow got a copy of it on VHS, and we watched it at Ivan's house, and we even threw the toast and had the squirt guns and everything in the newspapers, and it was kind of silly because it was just the three of us doing it, but we still loved it, and we loved Tim Curry in it. But the first like real proper viewing of Rocky Horror on a big screen was with an audience in college, and that was something else. That was really fun, and they have the whole virgin ceremony. If it's the first time you go to see Rocky Horror, they ask if you've seen it before, and if you say no, they put a V on your forehead, and you have to participate in the virgin ceremony, which is, they've put a balloon between your legs and say, we're going to pop your cherry. they pop the balloon between your legs, and it's ridiculous, but it's fun. And a lot of people are nervous about going to Rocky because of the virgin ceremony. It's just silly.
It's not like they're taking you out of the theater to sacrifice you. It's like, let's take them out. We have a virgin. Yeah. It's a sacrifice. No, it's all been a disguise. You just wanted to trick you. We needed a virgin for a sacrifice, and you're the one.
Yes. It's like the Wicker Man.
It was all a big, big charade. It's just, there's no Rocky Horror Picture Show.
We
sacrifice you. How do you think we keep people so young in Hollywood? It's the blood of virgins. Haven't you seen?
It doesn't actually exist.
Haven't you seen Countess Dracula?
But I don't know. I mean, I think it's definitely the cult film. I think if somebody says cult film, that's the first one that I think of for sure.
Oh, I think this is one of the, there's many cult films. I'm not going to list them right now, but this is one of the top ones. I think of all time, if you were just like make a list of cult films all time, this would be, had to be the top three, depending on who's doing the list, just because of, I would put it at number one. Doesn't mean it's like my personal best one. I'm just meaning all time best. Just because of the length, almost 50 years still in its initial release. I mean, this is the epitome of cult films. And you brought this up earlier. People try to make a cult film and say, it's a cult film. But also you got the people in the press, the media people for the companies who try to tell the press, oh, this is a cult film. You can't say it's a cult film when it just came out in theaters. I mean, literally, it's like in its first week or two, oh, this cult classic. I'm like, It just came out. It's not, that's not a cult classic. I mean, nobody was really calling Rocky Horror Picture Show a cult film until after it became a cult film. And it was just literally the Fox producer not trying to make a cult film. He was trying to make a buck.
And
it worked. I mean, whoever that person, you know, was, if they're still alive, they deserve a medal. And if not, give it to the family. I mean, because that's a smart business decision that proved the work, because according to Wikipedia, which we know is always correct, Rocky Horror Picture Show so far has grossed over $170 million. And
wow.
I don't know what it cost, but it cost, I'm sure, a pittance compared to that. So it's definitely made a profit. And it was all because of Jim Sharman doing the directing, Richard O'Brien basically coming up with the whole concept, everything, the wonderful cast, especially Tim Curry, you know, doing his performance. But you got to give credit to that producer for having the wherewithal to put it in those midnight showings and getting theaters to do that, because who knows how history would have been different if that producer, not a producer or promoter or whatever for Fox, didn't come up with that idea and follow through with it and make sure it happened, you know. And I think it was paired with Phantom of Paradise, you know. So
that's another great cult film.
So it's definitely, so you got to give a lot of people credit, but I mean, that one person who nobody knows the name, somebody probably does, I don't know who that is, but they deserve a footnote. They deserve a credit for it, because they're the ones that helped it stay out there on its initial release. And history might have turned out differently if it wasn't for that person.
Yeah, for sure. And it led to merchandise, all this merchandise to this day. It led to, there were even conventions. And even Tim Curry, again, he kind of, I think, stepped away for a little while from the whole Rocky thing, but he kind of came back and embraced it at some point. And I remember I saw this video clip of him at one of these Rocky conventions, and there were tons of people in the audience dressed up. And he said, he walked up to the mic and he said, "I've never seen so many people who look more like me than I do," because they were all dressed as Frank. And he was older, you know, he was probably, you know, 60s and at that point. But he was great. But yeah, it led to all the stuff, and then different iterations of it. Like, I saw one time I saw the Rocky Horror Puppet Show. They did Rocky with puppets, with the movie, but with puppets instead of the actors playing it out in front of it. And then they've revived it many times. A while back they had it on Broadway. It was Joan Jett was in it. Joan Jett was Columbia in that one. So they've, every so often, they'll do a revival of Rocky Horror. They did a remake of it on Fox with Laverne Cox that I mentioned earlier. And again, that one, it just doesn't live up to, I love Laverne Cox, but they're just like, it just didn't have the same energy or spirit or just weird fringe quality of the original. It just felt like, hey, we're the cool kids, and now we're going to do Rocky Horror too, you know. And it was too slick or something. I did like the opening. They had the usherette singing science fiction double feature, and as she sang, she walked by the posters, the movie posters outside the theater for each of the movies that she mentioned. I did like that bit. But then they tried to cut in like the callbacks from the audience into the film. It was weird. It's like they had the film, and then it would cut to an audience yelling the callbacks for certain parts of the movie, and that was jarring and awkward. It doesn't work. It definitely didn't work. Like you said, I think you think there's kind of, everybody's going to be compared to, every version is going to be compared to the original version, and it's a really tough act to follow. Like, you can't, I think on stage you can kind of, you can kind of, because of course any musical, you know, they can redo, they bring it back on stage, but you're always going to end up comparing it to the original version of Rocky Horror.
Well, definitely, and I think it definitely should have legs in theater always. And being that next year it's its 50th year, I'm sure there's going to be productions that are going to be popping up in college campuses, high schools, and there might be more of a national or maybe a touring. It'd be great if there was a touring one, you know, going around for that year. Whether it happens or not, I don't know. If people don't do it, it's a missed opportunity. But I bet my bottom dollar it's going to have more showings at midnight this next year than it did this year and the year before. And like I said, it's still going on because it's happening near where I live. And if you just type it in, you never know when it's going to pop up. And if it does, if you haven't seen the experience, as Danielle already said, and I'm agreeing with her, go see it and have that crowd experience. It's a once in a life. If you only do it once, at least you have that once in a lifetime. You can mark it off the bucket list, you know, that kind of thing. But I would recommend watch the movie first so you have an idea of what's going on, and then you can go there and just enjoy all the antics, and then you'll know how to participate even more of what's going on. You know, you'll know why they're talking. Because if you go in and you have no clue why people are doing this or that, you know, you're going to look a little like, what's going on here? Like you're in a different country and they're speaking a different language and they're doing some kind of ritual, and you're going to think, are they going to sacrifice me? Are they going to throw me up on stage? You know, you might be a little intimidated. So watch it the first time and do it. And Danielle, I want to thank you for joining me. And again, Tara Collinwood, A Dark Shadows podcast is wonderful to watch on YouTube. You can see her in it and doing all the stuff. And you also have the audio version. And I want to thank you for joining me. Did you have a good time talking about the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
Absolutely, Stephen. It was an absolute pleasure talking Rocky with you. Thank you for inviting me on. I had a really good time chatting with you. And it was a lot of fun. So thanks for having me. And it's a movie that has a special place in my heart. So it's fun talking about it with you.
And listeners, if you want to see what I look like and see what Danielle looks like, go to Tara Collinwood. Episode, what number is it going to be, Danielle?
80.
Episode
80.
80 is going to be out right around the same time. This podcast will be coming out. My episode will be coming out after hers, so it will already be out there. You can go run to YouTube after you listen to this. You can watch that. Then you can go watch the streaming version of Rocky Horror Picture Show, and then you could scan to see if it's showing up in your theater. But I know everybody is just dying to know with anticipation. What song am I going to end the show with? Well, there's only one song left that I can do justice with always saying anticipation, and that is Sweet Transvestite. Goodbye, everybody, and good night.
How'd you do, I? See, you've met my faithful hand in hand. He's just a little brought down, because when you knocked, he thought you were the candy man. Don't get strung up by the way I look. Don't judge a book by its cover. I'm not much of a man by the light of day, but by night I'm one hell of a lover. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Let me show you around and maybe play you a sign. You look like you're both pretty groovy. Or if you want something visual that's not too abysmal, we could take in an old Steve Reeves movie.
I'm glad we caught you at home. Could we use your phone? We're both in a bit of a hurry.
Right.
We'll just say where we are, then go back to the car. We don't want to be any worry.
Well, you got caught with a flat wheel. How about that? Well, babies, don't you panic. By the light of the night, it'll all seem all right. I'll get you a satanic mechanic. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania.
Why don't you stay for the night?
Night.
Or maybe a bite. I could show you my favorite obsession. I've been making a man with blonde hair and a tan, and he's good for relieving my tension. I'm just a sweet transvestite from transsexual Transylvania. Hey, I'm just a sweet transvestite. So, come up to the lab and see what's on the slab. I see you shiver with anticipation. But maybe the rain is really to blame. So I'll remove the cause. But not the symptom.